Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to our show, Empowering Family Caregivers. I am your host, Susan Bida, co-founder of eCareDiary.com. eCareDiary.com is a premier website on all issues related to caregiving and elder care. Our radio show, Empowering Family Caregivers, is just one example of our mission to help educate and offer helpful information to those caring for an aging loved one. Thank you for joining us live from New York City. Today, my special guest is John Mills, who is my fellow co-founder on eCareDiary.com, as well as my husband. John is here to discuss the latest updates on the new healthcare reform law and what caregivers and seniors can expect in the upcoming months. John is an expert on healthcare reform, having worked in Congress for more than 8 years and served on President Clinton's healthcare reform task force. He's also worked for a healthcare internet startup and Hip Health Plan, a regional health insurer in a product development and e-commerce capacity. He understands the practices of insurance companies and how the new law will benefit consumers. John, welcome to our show.
Thank you, Susan. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, John, healthcare reform was very hotly debated last summer, and then it became law this past spring, and now some of the benefits are about to take effect. Can you remind us all what are the healthcare reform law, what the healthcare reform law sets out to do, who is it for, and what are the key aspects of it?
Well, the healthcare reform law really is designed to accomplish two things. One is to create uniform consumer protection standards across the country and really to address the problem of the 46 million people in this country who do not currently have health insurance.
Okay, so you've set the stage for healthcare reform, what it is, who it's for. Can you tell us specifically what goes into effect in 2010?
Well, one of the most major things that goes into effect is preventive benefits. Basically, you will receive benefits at no cost for things like cancer testing, diabetes screening, obesity, and smoking cessation programs, amongst other things.
Okay, so do you mean to tell me that in the past, these preventative screenings, if you had health insurance, these preventative screenings weren't covered by health insurance?
Well, it was really very haphazard prior to this law. Basically, it really depended on what your employer chose to offer, what state you lived in. So if you lived in a state that mandated preventative benefits or you had an employer who wanted them covered, they were covered, but it was not covered universally for everyone.
Got it. Okay, so it seems to be a move in a very positive direction since from my perspective, the U.S. medical system seems to be more reactive than preventative.
Well, I think that's really true. The best way to describe the U.S. healthcare system is it's really a sickness treatment system. It's not really a healthcare system. It's not designed to keep people healthy and well. And that's really one of the reasons that the U.S. ranks 37th in the world in healthcare outcomes, according to the World Health Organization. One of the things that this healthcare reform bill is trying to do, and you see this in the preventative benefits, is to really reorient our healthcare system towards wellness and prevention.
Well, that's a move definitely in the positive direction, and it's a whole lengthy philosophical discussion as well. Let's get back to the healthcare reform law, and can you tell us what else goes into effect this year besides preventative measures?
Well, there's another
being covered.
Thank you, Susan. Well, there's another very important piece of the law that goes into effect on September 23rd, and that is allowing adult children to stay on their parents' health insurance until age 26. Under the current law, most insurance policies cover adult children up to age 23, but in order to get that coverage, your children have to be full-time students. If they're not going to school or working but don't get health insurance, they can't be covered under their parents' policy. So this is a real big step in the right direction to help people.
And this is obviously great news for our sandwich generation caregivers. For those of you out there who are not familiar with sandwich generation, these are people, typically baby boomers, who are not only caring for aging parents, but they're also caring for their younger children. And a lot of baby boomers these days are experiencing what's called the boomerang effect, where their children have graduated college and are returning home and can't find work in this economy, so they're living back at home with their parents, and their parents up until now had no ability to cover them under health insurance unless they bought a separate plan for them. So go ahead, John.
That's correct, Susan. And as you know, I have three nephews who are basically going to be eligible for coverage under this new law. So this is really huge for families, and especially caregiving families, and it really offers a sense of security that people don't have today.
Okay. So let's continue with what else takes effect on September 23rd, and why is September 23rd the big date?
Well, September 23rd is the big date because the way the law was written, major pieces of it, including the two benefits we just outlined, take effect 6 months after the law was signed, and it was signed on March 23rd. So September 23rd is that is why September 23rd is the big date here.
Got it. Okay, so you were also going to talk about sort of some of the other key aspects of the bill that go into effect on September 23rd.
Well, another important piece of the law is that it eliminates pre-existing conditions for children. And this is important because you can have a child who suffers from a chronic illness such as diabetes or has had some kind of a childhood disease such as childhood leukemia. And depending where they live, they may not be able to get health insurance. So the elimination of pre-existing conditions for children is a really big deal.
So, first of all, I mean, I know that we're a site for caregivers and for seniors who are aging and going through long-term care. I mean, it's hard for me to believe that children with pre-existing conditions could be denied health insurance coverage, much less seniors with pre-existing conditions. I'm sure we'll go into that later. But I think a very good move in the right direction, particularly for children.
Well, I think it's very important because one of the things that this is an example of is the fact that we don't have uniform standards across the country currently. But now that we have this national health care reform law, we're going to. So it's not going to matter whether or not you live in a state like New York, where we do, where pre-existing conditions for children have been outlawed for years, or you live in another state where it was allowed. Now we're going to have national standards, and this, I think, is a real step in the right direction.
Okay, so we've talked about preventative measures being covered. We've talked about children up until the age of 26 being covered. We've talked about pre-existing conditions for children being eliminated. What else goes into effect on September 23rd?
Well, there's another piece, which is a temporary high-risk pool, and this is really aimed at people who suffer from chronic conditions and therefore have a hard time getting health insurance because insurers are not that interested in covering them, and the premiums tend to be very high.
John, can you give us an example of who would be considered in a high-risk pool?
Well, for example, someone who suffers from diabetes would be someone who would be a good candidate for the high-risk pool. Also, someone who may be going through some kind of an unhealthy episode. For example, they may have cancer or they may have recently had a heart attack. Those types of people are very good candidates for a high-risk pool. And one of the good things about the high-risk pool is that the federal government will subsidize the premiums so they will be affordable for these people who suffer from either horrible health conditions or some kind of chronic condition.
Right. Okay, so you've summarized health care reform just for everyone who needed sort of a refresher on this, and you've highlighted the main features that are taking effect this September. But however, you and I, in our work with eCareDiary.com, are very involved in caregiver and elder care issues And we know that these issues are a major phenomenon in this country. And with regard to healthcare reform, it seems to be the big elephant in the room. Why isn't a major aspect of healthcare reform dealing with elder care?
Well, I completely agree with you that it is the elephant in the room that nobody really wants to talk about. And I think one of the big reasons that it did not get the same attention it should have in the health reform bill that was just recently signed into law is what your guest last week, Laurel Kennedy, raised, which is there is not really a strong advocacy group for caregiving in Washington. For example, when you think of senior citizen issues, you think AARP. But when you think of caregiving issues, who do you think of? And you really can't think of anybody off the top of your head. So that is really, I think, the major reason that we are not seeing this getting the attention that it deserves.
Well, you do think of the National Family Caregiver Alliance, but what
But the National Family Caregiver Alliance, and I think they do wonderful work, is not an advocate, and I can tell you from having worked in Washington, is not the same kind of strong advocacy group with the same kind of membership and clout of an AARP. They just don't have that kind of clout.
So they generate reports and they publish surveys, but...
Yeah, but they're not a real presence on Capitol Hill, and they really haven't been that active in the whole public policy debate up till now. That may change, but they haven't been up till now.
Okay. Well, now, there are some things that have been added to the health care reform bill to help caregivers on some level, right?
Yes.
The Class Act. You want to talk a little bit about the Class Act?
Yes, I'd be happy to. And I do want to let our listeners know that despite the fact that we think there should be more in the health care reform bill, it's not as though there's nothing in there for caregivers. I mean, there are a couple of very important things. One is the Class Act, and the Class Act is a federal long-term care program that will come online around 2013, and it basically is very it's different from private long-term care policies because, for example, you're not required to take a physical, so as long as you're a working adult, they're required to take you. Also, the benefit structure is different in that it gives you a cash benefit for what are considered non-traditional long-term care needs, such as respite care, home modifications to make it easier to age in place. These are the types of things that your typical private long-term care insurance policy does not cover today.
So I agree with you that this is a great start, but it's certainly not a solution. I mean, you just mentioned that these new benefits don't take effect until 2013. I mean, there are caregivers out there now and seniors who are drowning financially.
Well, unfortunately, when it comes to public policy, there's usually a 2 to 3 year ramp up on the start of a brand new program. And this Class Act and some of the things in health reform are really no different. So if you look at the Medicare prescription drug program that was launched, it took about 2 years from the signing of the law for the benefit actually to be available to senior citizens. So as difficult as it is for people who are going through this today and need help today, this is not atypical. The good news is that there is help on the way. People are just going to have to be patient.
And you mentioned to me also, I remember when we were talking about this, that you were talking about how Social Security and other benefits that have been developed in the past look very different from what they were when they were first created.
Yes, that's very true. Social Security and Medicare have been modified and changed and mainly added on to since their enactment. And I expect the same is going to be true with health care reform. I believe you'll see a lot of changes coming down the pike as the law goes into effect, as people identify weaknesses. I think caregiving is a perfect example. So I expect there's going to be a lot of opportunity for us to highlight caregiving issues as we move forward on health reform.
Well, that's a relief. And, you know, going back to my point, I mean, it's a huge, elder care is a huge piece that's missing from healthcare reform. And, you know, the irony of all this is that one of the I think most important aspects, not most important, but one of and a very important aspect of elder care is end-of-life planning. And last summer, I mean, you know, we remember, I mean, all the discussion about death panels and the hysteria that that caused. I mean, there was certainly a lot of discussion around that, and yet it never made it into the bill.
Well, I think that, frankly, last summer I've not seen more misinformation being thrown around during a debate on something. The death panels were a complete and total hoax. Basically, what this whole debate was about was whether or not Medicare should provide physicians with reimbursement for counseling on end-of-life planning. And basically what this means is whether or not people should get living wills and healthcare proxies. And basically a healthcare proxy is just identifying someone to speak for you in case you can't speak for yourself. And a living will are instructions about how you want to handle your end-of-life. It really, frankly, made me angry listening to the discussion of death panels, and that was largely based on my own experience. When my father was diagnosed with Parkinson's, one of the first things he did was to go out and get all of his documents in place. He got himself a will, he got himself a living will, a healthcare proxy, and when he was close to dying, he had a stroke. And he couldn't speak for himself. He had about 20% brain function. And I served as his healthcare proxy. And having the living will in place was a godsend. It made my life so much easier. So I feel that that discussion really did a disservice around helping people plan for end-of-life care.
I couldn't agree more. And, John, my family experience is opposite of yours, where my uncle never had documents in place. He was actually quite young. He was in his 50s, and he suffered from a pulmonary embolism, which is essentially a blood clot that started in his leg and landed near his lungs, which blocked oxygen to his brain, and he unfortunately ended up being 80% brain dead. The doctors certainly recommended that we do not continue life-sustaining devices for him. Unfortunately, my mother just could not bring herself to making that decision. And unfortunately, my uncle had none of his wishes expressed, and he never talked about it with any of the family members prior. So what ended up happening, very tragically, is that he died an incredibly slow death over a period of 22 months. I mean, we literally, she would visit him, and he would literally be deteriorating in the slowest, the slowest possible way you could imagine. And it was torture, not only, I'm sure, for him, but for all of us involved. And after that experience, I mean, and I think particularly after your dad, my father-in-law's experience, I think we immediately went and got ourselves our healthcare proxy and our living will, and we got our will in order and all these instructions in place so that we wouldn't put the burden on our families to making these decisions for us. I mean, I think it's an act of love when you don't want to burden your family with these type of heart-wrenching emotional decisions about your own life. You know, you have the ability and the capacity to make these decisions for yourself.
I completely agree, and I think that's the important thing that people need to remember about healthcare proxies and living wills. It's about allowing your wishes at the end of life, at the end of your life, to be fulfilled if you can't communicate them yourselves. And I agree with you 100% people should do this so that they don't place this burden on their families.
And I just would like to say at this point, on our site, there is an area on our site where you can actually pull up documents by state, because every state varies in terms of healthcare proxies and living wills, and you can see essentially what it looks like so that you can read through it and discuss it with your family. All right, so John, the future of elder care and health reform, what can we expect? What can we expect happen? I mean, obviously a lot of the debate has apparently simmered down, but what can we do and what can we expect for elder care in the future?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, this healthcare reform law is just a start, and I fully expect that you'll see changes coming down the road. As we mentioned, both Medicare and Social Security look very different today than they did when they were first enacted. I think one of the things we really need is a really strong advocacy group or groups to speak for caregivers' needs. And I know that Laurel Kennedy mentioned the National Organization for Women should be more active in this. I agree with her. I think there are other organizations that should be more active in that. Frankly, AARP probably should be more active in it. But I think that is a very important part of this, is getting a strong advocacy group to speak for caregiver needs. I think the other thing is a grassroots effort. This is not the type of issue that people go and talk to their members of Congress about, largely because caregivers are so busy to begin with. But I think if we're going to see changes, that's going to be necessary. So if you feel that there are things that the government should be doing to help caregivers, write your congresswoman, call them, go to town meetings, set up a meeting with them in their office during district office times. These are the types of things that do make a difference. It's very important. Grassroots activity is very important. And while people, think that money dominates politics, and I'm not going to say it doesn't, grassroots are also extremely important. I mean, I think we just talked about the death penalty. We saw the impact that type of stuff had. So, again, I can't emphasize enough that people need to be active on the issues that are important for caregivers.
And our congresswomen and men, obviously, I think contrary to popular thought, I really do like to hear from their constituents, right, John?
Oh, they absolutely do. And they, most of them have regular town meetings. Most of them have regular district office hours. They're absolutely interested in hearing from their constituents. They want to know how they can serve their constituents and help them.
Great. John, let's talk about some of the things that we could see potentially for elder care in the future. What are some of the main things that you think we need in terms of, added benefits for elder care in healthcare reform?
Well, I think that we need better coverage overall for the cost of long-term care. Medicare only provides a very small benefit for long-term care, and that's just after you get out of the hospital, so you can get coverage for nursing home or home care if you've just been discharged from the hospital, but it only lasts about 100 days. In order to get government help for long-term care, you generally have to qualify for Medicaid, and Medicaid is a program for the poor. So you basically either have to be poor or make yourself poor by divesting yourself of your assets to qualify for Medicaid. And I personally think that's a travesty. When I worked in Congress, I actually wrote a bill to provide a basic long-term care benefit in the Medicare program. And so I think that that's something that we should be looking at advocating for. Some of the other things I think we also need to be advocating for is getting reimbursement for technology that helps people age in their homes. Be it cameras or sensors or even, the emergency help, iPhone and I can't get up type of technology. Because, again, people want to age in their homes and they have a better quality of life and it's much less expensive. I also think that we need to be doing things to help caregivers themselves. I think things like flex hours, people talk about flex hours all the time for child care. But it never comes up when it comes to caregiving. But in effect, it's really the same thing. And so I think that's another place that we can be advocating.
Absolutely. And we've learned recently from, the MetLife study that the impact of caregiving on full-time caregivers' health is costing a lot of companies around the country almost $13 billion in additional health care expenses for caregivers just from the related stresses of caregiving.
Absolutely, and the study actually does recommend both technologies that help people manage care better, such as eCare Diary, and also things such as flex hours that will make their lives easier and make it easier for them to juggle all the things they have to do.
Well, you know, John, this has been incredibly informative. Thank you very much for joining us today. We've run out of time, and however, I think what you just mentioned, in fact, I think will be addressed by our next guest, Lori Orlov, who will be appearing with us as our guest on the technologies available for successful aging in one's home of choice. Lori Orlov is the founder of Aging in Place Technology Watch, and she will be our guest next week. We're very excited to have her. And, John, this was incredibly informative. For caregivers seeking help and information, you can visit www.ecarediary.com. That's www.ecarediary.com. One of the main tools on eCare Diary is called the Care Diary. It's a free medication and appointment management tool. It's one of the technologies that John just mentioned. This particular technology is free for families to use to keep track and manage all the medications and appointments and paperwork and legal documents, all stored safely and securely, and it's all shareable within your designated circle of care. All you have to do to use it is to register on our site, which is quick, free, and easy. You can also find us on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter. On Twitter, John and I are eCareDiaryJohn, and my Twitter address is eCareDiarySusan. Thank you again, our audience, and thank you, John, for joining us. And we'll see you all next Monday on August 9th with Lori Orlov at 2 o'clock.